Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 23 February, Budget Day. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Alex Dace, trading updates from Marion Roberts. We got Grindrod. We had those Avenge results after the market closed. The construction stocks not showing great results, frankly. Peter Munford from Super Group, their margins are improving. And truthfully, considering the supply bottlenecks, a good set of numbers. Sean Saunders from Revix. Bitcoin is supposed to be an inflation hedge, but it's not. And also, new altcoins coming to their exchange. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management, authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Kumba celebrates record year with a 69% bump in the dividend. The full year dividend of 103 rand and 20 cents a share is equivalent to 100% of its earnings and about four times what that low was of what, about 2016. Washington Post, Germany suspends Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. This is as Putin takes over two what he calls renegade provinces within Ukraine. And they've essentially said, nope, they're going to halt the process of certifying the Nord Stream pipeline from Russia. This is the one through the Black Sea rather than through Ukraine. Russia's got a problem here because gas and oil is basically their economy. And of course, Germany also just wants to go green. Morning markets, US was playing catch up and red, S&P and NASDAQ down 1%. Asia, green. Well, Sydney's up 0.4%. Tokyo is closed for the Emperor's birthday. Commodities, mostly red. Gold, 1,902. Brent hit 99.48 yesterday, but now 97.16. Platinum, 1,084. Palladium, 2,354. Rhodium, unchanged, 18,290. Rand, 1507. Top 40, red open, about 600 points down. That is 0.9%. And that as Tencent trades up 0.7% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace, portfolio manager at Thombo Wealth. Alex, as always, appreciate the early morning. I mentioned in the intro there, we saw the Avenge results after the close on Monday, reclassifying their Trident Steel as a continuing operation. And that's a technical term that hurt them. We saw the Murray and Roberts update yesterday that I thought looked a little light at about 30 cents HEPS. Market seemed to agree. Construction stocks, are we just looking in the wrong place? Or is this a sector that perhaps doesn't have the momentum that many thought?
Yeah, good morning, Simon. But I think there's different few factors also at play here that's company specific. So if you look at Meyer Roberts, some of their legacy issues in the Middle East, the non-core part of the business is still detracting a lot from performance. And we're going to have to see from the detailed results what exactly the cash generation of the business is and so forth. But it does still seem like Meyer Roberts' 2 to 3 year earnings profile looks attractive. But perhaps the stock has run ahead of itself in a shorter term. This update on face value does seem a little bit light, so we'll see when indeed the results comes up. Avenge, I mean, also a couple of ones-off impacts there. The fact that Trident Steel couldn't be sold was a big disappointment. I mean, certainly, of course, that leaves all the complex accounting regarding reclassification, but also that money would have been used to pay off debt, which is critical now because Avenge is looking to expand and then more months with lots of CapEx and so forth. So to get that balance right between paying down debt and having some free cash flow left and so forth, it's put the investment case a bit more precarious than it was before. And as a result, working capital is going to be a lot more important. So there's some certain aspects. There's also some once-off issues with the old Avenge construction, which is Greenica, et cetera. But yeah, the fact of the matter is we haven't seen too many projects get to the ground yet in SA regarding construction, and we still need that to happen. It will certainly be a big boost to the economy if it does happen. But we still need to see more evidence. And perhaps with the budget today, we'll see more, hopefully more information regarding that or and so forth. But I haven't seen any evidence from my engagements with managers of cement and construction in South Africa that we have seen a big step up in construction spend.
Yeah, the shovels aren't turning the soil just yet. Grindrod update, looking fairly strong in that Maputo Port doing very well for them. They've had years of tough times, but my sense is that, I mean, the stock's at a 52-week high, and a good looking update coming out of them, from them.
Yeah, no, certainly. The problem with Grindrod also is always the very complex in the way the accounting is. Always seems to be some sort of reclassifications that's happening there, or some non-core asset, etc. So I guess they're the king of bad PO, which doesn't help the share price. But certainly they are moving in the right direction, and the Maputo terminal, the volumes is going to be pushed through there going forward. Certainly the prospects are looking a lot more enticing for Grindrod. It's been for a number of years. And if you look at the share price performance, it's been quite poor over an extended period of time, but it's starting to, momentum starting to change. And I certainly know a few investors locally that are starting to do a very close look at Grindrod. So it's looking exciting for the first time in a number of years.
Yeah, I agree. First time in a number of years. Kumba, I mentioned in the intro there, I mean, this is what commodity companies are supposed to do. When your commodity booms, you make large amounts of money and pay large dividends. A hundred plus rand dividend puts them on a dividend yield of about 15%.
Yeah, and if everything falls right for you, you can obviously create record results, and that's exactly what I did. The problem with Kumba, of course, is there's no real production growth going forward. And as a result, you're dependent on what's going to happen with the iron ore prices. So that record iron ore prices on average, I think only in 2011 or 13 was slightly high on average. But going forward, you have to ask yourself, where is it going to go from here? They paid out 100% of the earnings. Some investors were even looking for more. Kumba, record set of results, but difficult to get excited from here, because when it comes to cyclical businesses and they generate record results, you know, you have to start thinking a bit more contrarian and say this is not sustainable. But iron ore is notoriously difficult to forecast. Every time you think iron ore is going to collapse, it makes a bounce again and so forth. So I prefer to play iron ore more through diversified, where if something does go wrong, at least hopefully some of the other commodities can offset it.
I take your point on that. And once you've made a record production, as you say, what is next? I mean, you can make another record, but at some point that stops. You are beholden to those iron ore prices. Thanks, Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our question today on our LinkedIn and Twitter profile, talking around Avenge, talking Marion Roberts trading update. Both disappointed the market. I mean, do you see value here? You can have your vote. You can have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Peter Munford, CEO at Supergroup. Results for 6 months ending December saw revenue up 8.4%, headline earnings per share up 19.6%, cash generated up 14.4%. Peter, appreciate the time today. Mentioned the cash there, strong cash, but also really good improvement in operating profit margin, up from 6.1 to 7.3. How much is that perhaps at the previous period was, of course, 2020, nasty lockdowns. You also did the New Zealand acquisition, which I imagine would have helped some synergies in the region down there as well. Are there other issues sort of benefiting you in terms of operating margin?
Yes. Hi, Simon. Thanks for having us. Yes, there are. As you said, it was a strong performance in operating margin. You've certainly seen an improvement in our operating margins across our supply chain businesses, particularly our consumer and convenience businesses. Mm-hmm. And that's mainly been driven by new business generation and a number of new distributor contracts. That's a particularly good performance given that we did take some serious setbacks in July and August with the KwaZulu-Natal rioting and related events. We also saw a margin improvement in our Fleet Africa operations, which was good to see, and that's largely driven by ad hoc rentals. And then, as you highlight, the LeasePlan acquisition mm-hmm. in Australia and New Zealand, that contributed in Australia, although we did bear quite a lot of acquisition costs. And of course, LeasePlan only came in for 4 months, and there were quite significant acquisition costs linked to that. And then actually our dealerships, although turnover was down, new vehicle sales are down, we did see a margin improvement due to the strength of used vehicle values in our dealerships in South Africa and UK. So it is really right across the board of all three divisions.
Okay, so as you point out, I mean, touching all the points there. And you mentioned better than expected performance consumer facing in SA, which, I mean, obviously pandemic, but also you mentioned the riots back in July and those issues. I mean, you know, they were only a week, but they continued for a while. Riots aside, I imagine we're almost 2 years into a pandemic now. You kind of got used to the operating within that environment and the challenges it throws at you and your team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that our consumer and convenience businesses were significant underperformers. I mean, most particularly through and obviously through this COVID period. So they are coming relatively off a relatively low base, you know, and obviously we did significant cost cutting, reorganization, rationalization and the like at the time. But it is very heartening to see that growth coming through, not so much within your existing core clients that you might have had 18 months ago, mm-hmm. but in relation to new business that we have generated and new distributor contracts that have come on board. And, you know, the fast food side, the quick service restaurant side is also starting to improve now, which is exciting because, you know, not only did the looting impact directly for that 2 month period, you know, a lot of sites were severely damaged and are only coming on stream now. So it was a strong performance in supply chain South Africa.
When I chat with other CEOs across industries, it's about supply chains and the challenges with global supply chains. You're, of course, the coal face of this. I mean, are we seeing improvements? I just saw a note out saying that days at anchor and berth in LA port continues to fall. Now, LA is the other side of the world, but it suggests maybe things are starting to improve.
Yeah, you've actually hit the critical issue. It's supply chain. I mean, the shortage of products post this COVID world, and hopefully we're going into a post-COVID stage now, is absolutely acute. The shortage of semiconductors resulted in the German automotive manufacturing industry dropping to output levels last seen 36 years ago, so back to 1985 levels of output. And we are a huge distributor of automotive parts to and from production lines. So that had a significant impact. Virtually across all of our businesses where you're dealing with imported products, there are massive supply chain shortages because of manufacturing units that closed for periods during COVID lockdowns. And these are now really stretching your supply chains and stressing international supply chains in particular. One that's particularly tragic for us is, of course, Bike Bridge and all the inefficiencies there. Because we've seen great demand for copper and other substrates coming out of the DRC and Zambia, and yet it's been constrained by these border delays at Bike Ridge and even the new entities put in place in Zimbabwe have not really performed adequately yet. So that is a tragic supply chain blockage that has huge potential moving into this year.
And I imagine for you, it's utilization of the fleet. I mean, yeah, if you're planning to pick up something from A to B and it's simply not at A, you've got a fleet, whatever it might be, essentially sitting idle.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a very, very general rule of thumb, in a long-distance fleet in South Africa at normal margins and prices, you need to do about 15,000 kilometers a month to have a payable proposition. I mean, we were seeing our cross-border vehicles running from the DRC to Durban down to under 5,000 kilometers a month, which means they're sitting at borders for 14 and 15 days, which is really unacceptable, and you're not getting the return then. But let's hope this is settling down as we move into calendar 2022.
Yep. And of course, as it does, then that will further potentially help margins and profitability. We'll leave it there. Yes. Peter Munford, CEO of Supergroup, appreciate the time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Sean Saunders, CEO and founder of Revix. Sean, appreciate the early morning crypto insights as always. Two points in the first one. I suppose Bitcoin was always going to be an inflation hedge, and we've seen inflation surging globally. And Bitcoin's kind of not acting like that. And what we have actually seen is that crypto has come down with other markets in terms of general fears around inflation, around Ukraine. I mean, all the worries in the world. In many ways, this is, I suppose, saying that it's not inflation hedge, but it is saying that crypto is becoming a sort of a standard asset for the investing world.
Morning, Simon. Thanks very much for having me on again. So yeah, this is the start of this asset class, right? I mean, There's no correlation really to gold. I mean, it's quite weird. A few months ago, we were talking about crypto and in particular Bitcoin's very high correlation to gold. And then sort of, you know, the correlation with tech stocks. And I suppose crypto has actually been treated as a bit more of a risk off asset over the last while. And, you know, it's kind of come down with the entire market. Very few assets have sort of increased. I mean, probably gold and some government bonds really have done well over the last few weeks. But it seems that the inflation discussion has now shifted to this geopolitical discussion around Russia and Ukraine. And the markets seem to be just moving along sort of with developments that occur on that front. But I wouldn't write off crypto just yet as an inflation hedge, because I think, you know, if you look back in history and you look at, you know, high inflationary periods, I mean, we've never actually had cryptocurrency exist through one of those.
Well, yeah.
And it's sort of how the asset class performs during the entire period, not just at the beginning. And we're really just at the beginning of this inflationary period.
That's actually a great point. I mean, we're literally months into it. And if we go back to the US and their last high inflationary period, it lasted for the better part of a decade. So you know, we're all kind of assuming that inflation will be tamed by, I don't know, June. It might not be. We might be talking about this for years. And I like your point. It's the making of an asset class. How have the bundles, you've got a couple of bundles on your platform, how have they performed in this market where, you know, certainly we always look at and talk around Bitcoin. And that is the big one in the room, although, as you've mentioned, it's significance is, or its relevance is declining relative to the others. How have the bundles been doing?
So I think it's exactly that, right? The Bitcoin dominance index, really, the total percentage of the crypto market that Bitcoin makes up, has declined over the last several years. And I mean, it went from 75% odd about 2.5 years ago, and that's down to roughly around 40%. And we see that trend continuing, right? So with that trend continuing, the bundles that we offer, you know, they're outperforming Bitcoin. So on a year-to-date basis, our top 10 bundle, which owns the top 10 largest cryptocurrencies, that's up roughly about one-third higher than Bitcoin. I actually think it's moderately down over the last year, with Bitcoin also slightly down. But it's just been an interesting period, I suppose, looking at this crypto asset class. When you zoom out, right, and this is the interesting thing, is you don't look over a one-year horizon and go, okay, right, this is up or down, you know, a couple of percent. When you zoom out over that 3 or 5 year horizon, I mean, we launched these bundles back in 2017. That's when things go like, wow. I mean, you're looking at your returns, you know, 4 or 5x your money. And that's really, I think, the opportunity when you're looking at crypto over, say, the next 5 or 10 years. Because if this is an asset class, and don't get me wrong, this is still a very high-risk asset class.
Sure.
But when you look out over a much longer-term horizon, the industries that this asset class is looking to disrupt, I mean, you're looking at fintech, you're looking at banking, mobile payments. I mean, there's so much going on. It's that sort of opportunity that really excites a lot of people, because then it's not just a, you know, 1 or 2x return. You're looking at, you know, multiples of your money. And it's sort of like investing in an early stage business, right? Where you've got this sort of 10xer or 20xer like return opportunity.
And your bundles, as I recall, are equal weight. In other words, Bitcoin in that top 10 will be 10% rather than 40%, which means your smaller ones are also in many cases upweighted. So they're all sort of equal and then rebalanced on a regular basis.
No, that's correct. So if you go and backtest a performance of, let's say, a market-weighted bundle where you would have, you know, 40% in Bitcoin, you know, 10-odd percent in Ethereum, et cetera, you would have the return sort of comparison doesn't even exist. I mean, there's roughly around a 75% annualized excess return on an equally weighted bundle. You'll see a lot of providers in the market, they offer sort of market weighted bundles. And I'm just like, well, why don't you just go out and buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, and maybe Cardano? Because then you're essentially owning 75% of what you otherwise would be buying in that bundle. So that equal weighting is really sort of our big value add, because every month, you know, we'll rebalance the bundle to make sure that you're owning 10% of each of the top 10 largest cryptocurrencies. And with the other bundles, we take an equally weighted approach as well.
You're bringing a new altcoin to the Revex platform, Luna, L-U-N-A, not Luna as in the moon. Tell us a bit about this one. I'd never heard of Luna, and I had to go do some Googling of it.
But that's keeping up with the trend, right? I mean, every time I've come on the show, there's a new cryptocurrency. Yeah. So this one's just for you, Simon. The Luna cryptocurrency, it's a cryptocurrency that's launched on the Terra network. And really what this network is looking to do is it's similar sort of to Ethereum. It's a network that has smart contract functionality. So similar to Ethereum, Polkadot, Solana, Cardano. And what this network's really looking at doing is enabling mobile payments. And I suppose, you know, remittances more broadly. I'm not going to get into the detail too much, but the Terra network allows you to create stable coins. You may have heard of, say, USDC, yes, which we offer on our platform as well, USDT. And really, this network focuses on creating stable coins that are sort of like, you know, linked to real world assets, so dollars, gold, etc., and enable you to make payments across the globe. So really solving the big issues that we have right now of, you know, making an international payment is expensive. It's slow. You know, you can only make payments during weeks instead of during over weekends and all the rest. So this network's really looking at disrupting that. And the adoption's been quite remarkable. I mean, we actually have to look back at sort of the last 12 months' performance, and it's the top performing large cap cryptocurrency. In 2021, it performed remarkably. I mean, even saying this percentage is kind of mind blowing. It returned 14,100% in 2021. And it's come down a little bit in 2022. But I think, you know, this is really a big industry that it's looking to disrupt. Currently, it has a market cap of roughly around $22 billion. So that's equivalent to the likes of MTN, if you had to sort of look at a South African stock. So it's a big project. I mean, this is a really big opportunity.
Yeah, and that global payment. I know the banks call their network SWIFT, but it is truthfully anything but SWIFT. We'll leave that there. Sean Saunders, CEO Revex, launching Luna, L-U-N-A, on the Terra network, which is, again, more of that smart contract. But I like this. This is linked to those stable coins. Sean, appreciate, as always, the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting Airbnb's excellent results with Momentum Securities yesterday and asked the question, is this a stock that you're looking to invest into? About a fifth of you said, yep, it's doing great. And it's held up. It was listed literally, you know, December 2020, just ahead of the pandemic. A third of you said not for you. And the rest are just over 40% saying, oh, look, you prefer ETFs for your offshore exposure. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m., podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, Tetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast. You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now on the money.